Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
I am walking night and day in the straight and narrow way, and I'm going to my Lord and to my Lord. I am walking night and day in the straight and narrow way.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Brad and Amy Williams? Y'all like Brad and Amy? Originally from Northwest Arkansas, Brad Williams fronts the acclaimed country band The Salty Dogs, as well as Big Silver and solo shows, and he and his wife Amy play as a duo as they did tonight. More can be found at thesaltydogs.net. Alright, well, welcome to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at the Argenta branch of William F. Lehman Public Library in beautiful downtown North Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and tonight's show is sponsored by the Argenta Arts Foundation, both here in North Little Rock. And I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here, strumming is electric for us tonight, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Among other things, Mark was a house guitarist at the late Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here behind us? Each week we feature an artist, and so tonight we're doing something new and different. Our artist is our storyteller, Adam Smith, which are his photos up here on the monitors around the room. So we've gone multimedia. So these are all Adam's photos. And our listeners can find out more about these photos and Adam at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Originally from Macon, Georgia, acclaimed photographer Adam Smith has captured the blues of the Deep South for over 15 years. His works have appeared in galleries in Oxford, Mississippi, Atlanta, Georgia, and Macon, Georgia, and his photographs have been chosen for permanent display at the Georgia Music Hall of Fame. Twice, Adam has been personally requested to work with world-acclaimed photographer Annie Leibovitz on shoots in the Mississippi Delta, and in 2010, Adam worked with Marty Stewart to shoot for his most recent Grammy-nominated album, Ghost Train, in Nashville's famed RCA Victor Studio B. The album went on to win a Grammy. Smith's I Fell Down on My Knees image was chosen for the back cover of Alan Greenberg's Love in Vain, A Vision of Robert Johnston, with foreword by Martin Scorsese. Adam relocated back to his hometown of Macon, Georgia, where he is pursuing his career as a freelance photographer. Tonight, Adam takes us first to Georgia, then to Mississippi in A Strong Current Twice. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Smith.
Looking back now, I realize that my two older brothers, Alex and Brian, had some sort of agreement between them to go after me in any form or fashion that they could. It was never ending. Of course, it would be a couple of decades before I wisened up to the brotherly schemes that they seemed to always be cooking up against me. It was a balmy day in our old house on Rivoli Drive in Macon, Georgia. I must have been about six. Alex, Brian, and I were still wiping the sleep out of our eyes as we walked out onto the hot backyard reading over our father's red felt-tipped pen list of Saturday chores. Brian's yellow lab, Rebel, was running around circles, hyper as usual. He was one of those dogs that never really got it. So much so that my father had rigged up a thin electric wire around the very top of the waist-high fence in order to deter Rebel from visits in the inner courtyard when my parents hosted guests for cookouts. Looking back on it now, it would compare to be one of those not-so-safe invisible fences for dogs today. I was not even sure that it even worked anymore because Rebel would just back up and leap over the fence if he really wanted to be annoying. Once again, Brian would explain in his southern drawl, even as a young kid, number one on the list, pick up all pine cones and sticks in the backyard. Pine cones and sticks was underlined. Adam, that's your job. I remember thinking, man, I always get handed this job. This is not fair. I began to do my Saturday pickup with oh-so-familiar black trash bag that had already begun to get heavy with pine cones. It rubbed against my legs and swung back and forth, leaving little painful scratches. Alex and Brian were over in the corner of the yard up to something. I could see it. But I was not yet worldly enough to know it was a plot to destroy me. Stop it, Rebel, I screamed as he jumped on me, causing the bag of pine cones to swing wildly around and scratch my legs even more. Brian turned around now from what seemed like a small football huddle in the high school games. Hey, Adam, we got a deal for you. Alex and I know you hate picking up this pine cone job, so we'll take that job over if you grab that electric fence and see if that thing even works anymore. My ears perked up. What if it does? I started to say. It doesn't, Brian interrupted me. That's why Rebel always gets over into the courtyard and we need to fix it. I've done it and Alex has done it. You have to do it. It's no big deal. I don't even think it's plugged in. I looked down at the bag. God, I hate picking up these pine cones. I thought as a bead of sweat ran down my forehead and landed in my eye, wiping the sting away, I stepped up to the fence. My heart started beating very fast. Man, I don't know. Just do it, Adam. It's no big deal, Alex exclaimed. We said we would do the pine cones if you did it. Yeah, I thought, these crap heads will be doing my job after this goes down. I mean, this thing has always been spotty. I looked over my shoulder, following the thin wire of the extension cord that ran out of sight and around the corner of the house where it was plugged in, squinting my eyes as if to see around the corner. I looked back at my brothers, a stupid smile formed on their faces. I glanced at Rebel, he was doing the same. Fine. I stepped up and grabbed the fence wire with both hands. The electric shock flowed up my arms and into my chest and down my legs. My brother's eyes got big as they saw my face cringe up. The deep laughs bellowed across the yard. It's about all I can remember coming from Brian, my oldest brother, that you might even hear in the audience tonight because he's here with me. Oh my God, Alex bent over laughing. He did it. Okay, let go. Let go, Adam. Adam, let go. I couldn't even talk or come close to releasing my grip. I was glued to that fence like a shrink wrap on a voluptuous rump roast. Their laughter halted. Holy crap, let go. He can't. He can't. Alex started to run. Rebel started to run. They were both in slow motion to me. Cut the power, Brian screamed. Cut the power. Alex disappeared around the corner. After what seemed like hours, he finally pulled the cord. I dropped immediately into a heap on the ground. I think I remember my hair smoking. When I came to, Brian and Alex were standing over me. Rebel's drool dripped on my face as I looked up at all three of them. You okay, little man? You okay? They both poked at me with sticks from my bag as if they were gonna get shocked now themselves. You a-holes, I cried out. Oh my God, they both doubled over laughing. Oh my God, that was good. I pushed myself up on tingling arms, still numb from the shock, and swaggered inside. I could hear them laughing even after I shut the door. Those pine cones never got picked up. My Canon AE-1 dangled around my neck in the car as I drove my friend John Hennessy north on Highway 7 from Oxford, Mississippi. He had been begging me for some time to go out here. It was hard for me to take people, though. I wanted this place for myself. I wanted to think it was undiscovered, almost like it did not exist to outside folks. Junior Kimbrough's juke joint sat about 30 yards off of Highway 4 in North Mississippi near Holly Springs. At that point, I'd been going there for about a year, many a nights of drinking lukewarm cans of Budweiser and pockets full of corn whiskey. I had discovered my calling at Junior's. John had a large grin on his face as we drove north. I looked back at the road. Now I'm gonna tell you, dude, I said. This place is not like any other place you've been before. I know, dude, John said. You can't just get completely wasted out here. You have to behave yourself. Dude, I know. Okay, I said. We turned left on Highway 4, leaving 7, waning in the dusk in my rearview mirror. The night was closing in quick. Not much on this road, John said, his voice a little lower than before. Nope, I said, and I turned up my radio knob loud. Lonesome Road, I'm pretty sure it was. I always blared Junior about this time in the trip. I looked over at John, who was sipping his Budweiser as he squinted his eyes to take the outside world in, but it was black as night, pitch black. I lit a smoke and held it out the window, the humid Mississippi night pressing against my arms. How long is this road? It's about 7 or 8 miles. Man, I really don't know. The first time I came out here, I missed it like 4 times. We rose up over the small hill, and in the distance on the right, I could see that dim light start poking its head up through the night. There it is. John rubbed his palms on his jeans and wiped the sweat away. Nice, man. I could feel his hesitancy. We pulled up slowly so John could take a good look at the place. All we could see was cars with darkened figures walking by and disappearing into the night. A few folks standing on the dirt porch shouting out the story they had had from that day. We were the only white people. Holy crap, John said. I'm not doing this, Adam. I'm not doing this. I laughed as we circled the dirty, dusty parking lot. Yes, you are, John. You wanted to come out here, and now you're here. I parked the car on down the road due to how many folks there was there that night. Get out of the damn car. Now. John reluctantly stepped out, his legs weak at the knees. We passed through the small patches of people in the parking lot as we walked up to the dirt porch, getting a few glances that I was familiar with by this time. The music played loud, squeezing through the cracks in the doors and had no dope smoking carved by a knife vertically on the left side of the heavy wooden doors. John clung to my shirt like a 2-year-old clinging to his mother's leg. I tried to shake him off, it had no effect. I opened the doors to a crowded, hot, sweaty room and gave my $5 to the door lady. I turned to John. Hey dude, give me your money. John's eyes were glazed over. Damn man, never mind. I handed the door lady another $5 from my wallet for Mr. Zombie Boy. Get a hold of yourself, dude, seriously. We walked through the crowd, past the pool hustler smashing balls in pockets, and through the dancers. Everyone moving together in a herd almost, sweat and beer filled the air, hips and crotches grinding together, moving in rhythm. There's Junior over there, I motioned to John. Junior always sat with a cane on the left side of his chair, pretty much holding court till he decided it was right time to get up and play. We walked over to the makeshift bar, John still clinging to me. Junior's wife greeted me. Hey, sugar. Hey, pretty lady, just as it always said. Budweiser, please. She dipped her hand in the lukewarm trough and handed me one. This is my friend John. He still had his head on a swivel, gazing about the place, trying to take it all in. She winked at me. What do you want, man? I said as I jabbed my elbow into his ribs. Oh, hi, he finally stammered to her. I'll have a Budweiser as well. You want some corn, boy? She said in a loud voice with a smirk on her face. Ma'am? She leaned in closer but still said loudly, I said, you want some corn? John was so confused. No ma'am, I'm not hungry. I've already eaten tonight. The entire immediate area of the bar erupted with laughter, including me. No, baby, some corn whiskey. Yes, and he will have some, I said, still laughing. She reached under the bar and brought out 2 half pints of corn. I looked at John. We clinked the bottles together and both took a large swig. Good God, man. John croaked as his eyes immediately turned red and he clutched at his throat. Ah, you like that, don't you? Junior's wife purred. John bent over laughing. He already knew he was in good company. The rest of the night, John blended in well after a nice warm buzz started passing through our bodies. See, the thing about Juniors is, it's not about the color of your skin. It's all about the music. It's all about the music. The great Southern writer Larry Brown put it best. The people are all moving together on the floor now. Legs, hips, and feet and hands moving, and no two of them alike. Everybody doing what the music makes them feel. A big packed herd. The music grows and grows and becomes more intricate and gains power and weight until it's screaming to be let out of the room and onto the sidewalk and up the street. It's gathering centrifugal force. In the dark, any trouble you have can fade while you just listen to the music and move your feet, knowing it'll take the hurt away, cure whatever ails you. Tomorrow ain't come yet.
So thank you so much, Adam Smith, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. Now, in the second half of your story at Junior Kimbrough's, at that point, you've been going there for a year, right? Can you tell us the story of the first time you ever went there?
Oh, Lord, yes. I can't remember who I'd originally gone out there with, but it was much like I pulled some of the parts of that story from me going out there the first time. The place was just amazing. I don't know if I did it justice in trying to describe the place. There were some parts of the story that really stuck out to me. Going out there, I met Cedric Burnside the first time, Kenny Brown the first time, Kenny Kimbrough the first time. You know, Junior was rumored to have, at the end of his life, 33 kids. So he had a lot of them running around there, and most of them did play music. But the place was just really indescribable. If you do get a chance, there's a band that out of Memphis, Tennessee, that I do some work for, North Mississippi All-Stars, that had Larry Brown wrote the... And the piece that I read right at the end is the piece from their liner notes. And Larry, there's about five or six more paragraphs in that, and that is just... It will send chills up your spine of the way he describes that place and Junior's music. But I made friends there very quickly. I was obviously literally a lot of times one of the only white people there. And it was something like that Junior just kind of knew how much that I understood the music, and I was there to be there to support it. I would always take prints back and give them to Junior, and you know, whether he ever did anything with them, I don't know. But, you know, there was a pit off to the side where Junior played. And one of my images from going out there was one with his hand sticking out that comes to mind the best. And that was on Fat Possum's, his album off of Fat Possum label called Meet Me in the City, that I was really proud of. But, you know, Junior's hands were just so big. But there are times when I look back and there were people that came through that door that he would charge $75 to $100 to take any kind of pictures up there. And, you know, and Junior's, I found out later, was a place that people make pilgrimages to. Bono came out there one time, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger. And it literally, it was just a shack on the side of the road, but it literally... when I started shooting out there, that's where I literally almost, I guess, quote unquote, came to my Jesus moment. I discovered I literally had such an epiphany that, you know, sometimes I wish I didn't now that had not happened to me. But I literally, the energy and the energy in that room that came off of his music and the people dancing there. And there's just so many factors that went into it, but it changed me. I literally came to tears in that box, and I was like, literally, this, if I could ever capture the energy and the music and the feeling from a room like this and in music, then this is what I want to do with my life. And you know, and a lot of times, like I said earlier, I feel like that I was lucky, because I think a lot of people go through life and they don't ever have a feeling like that. But I look back on it sometimes and it's really rough being a photographer these days. I mean, the money's not always there. I do love what I do and I would never change it for the world. But, and I do remember that night like it was yesterday. But, and I made so many good friends out there. I still keep up with the guys like Cedric Burnside. You know, Cedric Burnside came through Macon and he stayed at my house. And it's just things like that, you know. There was a time where, you know, there were cops supposedly going to have a roadblock going back to Oxford from so many people being out at Junior's that night. And Cedric was like, look, I know a different route to take you, and which was totally unbeknownst to me. And I got out into the dark road and couldn't figure out if that was Cedric who had just pulled off the side of the road. And 30 minutes later, I turned around because I was like, this can't be Cedric. It can't be taking this long. Drove 30 minutes back, and Cedric drives all the way back because he saw I turned around, taps me on the shoulder, and he's like, that was me you were following. Let's go. And it's just like things like that, man. It's just indescribable. They knew I was out there for a good reason. Junior passed away. I ended up with a friend named Amos Harvey, who actually still lives in Water Valley now. He went on to be North Mississippi All-Stars tour manager and then the tour manager for LCD Sound System for a long time. And we raised like over $800 when Junior passed away and didn't have a headstone, which, you know, was a real shame. And then his Juke Joint burned down and we teamed up together and raised over about $4,000 from some shows that was a big night that actually Mark came and played when he was playing with crazy Richard Johnston at the time. But, you know, there were great things that went on like that and we had a good time supporting that it's just amazing things. I would never give it back.
Do you remember the last time that you went to Junior Kimbrough's?
Wow, that's a good question. Before it burned down?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I could almost say that the last time I went was the time it did burn down. I remember getting called, and of course I went to Ole Miss, so anybody out there who went to Ole Miss, you were probably still up from that night drinking heavily. And I got the call and it was like 4 a.m. there, like Junior's is burning down. And I drove, probably still extremely intoxicated, out there early that morning. The sun was coming up and it was devastating. I mean, when you say a place like that burned down, it was still had smoke. There were two cars out there that exploded, but I actually have some images of that on my website that, you know, just remembering that, I mean, people went out there, you could look through the rubble and see pool balls, pieces of slate from the pool table, pieces of wood that hung on the door, you know, that made the door frame. It was just literally an amazing place. It's, you know, I think maybe why I can't remember why, you know, the exact last day or last night I was out there is because you start taking stuff like that for granted, and that's a good lesson in life, is to not take stuff like that for granted, because you never know how long it's going to be, especially when you're walking around a place like that was so special and seeing, you know, stripped wiring on the walls coming out, so you never knew what that place was going to go. But, you know, and when we raised the money for it, we gave the musicians back, bought them the guitars and stuff and amps that they lost out there that they would leave out there, but you know, Amos and I just decided there was really no way you could build something like that and recreate it.
All right. Well, we have a few minutes here at the end for audience questions.
Adam, I don't really have a question, but I've just got a comment. I graduated from Ole Miss in 91, and I used to work at a bar, which is now City Grocery. It was Sid and Harry's, and I recorded an album there for Junior. This brought back a flood of memories for me and really kind of made me tear up and give me a little chicken skin. So thank you for that. It was great.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot.
Yes, I'd be curious what it was like to have the opportunity to work with Annie Leibovitz as a photographer.
Oh, and Lord.
And equally, I am curious as to how Annie Leibovitz responded to be able to have the opportunity to work with Adam Smith.
Honestly, it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. Annie is a complete, complete workhorse. We were together for a solid week, maybe a week and a half. I picked her up from the Memphis airport. I'd been talking to her producers and her assistants for weeks on end trying to plan this trip. There were some amazing parts about working with her, and there were some not so amazing parts. And I really don't want to go into the not so amazing parts since this is live radio. Annie, like I said, is a workhorse. She's amazing. She's got so much energy. As far as how, I literally at that time, I was very blessed to where people were just recognizing my work at a really young age of doing that blues work down through there. I had done a radio show a lot like this one called Thacker Mountain Radio Show. And I stage managed that show and helped it get off the ground. And then I started working at a blues bar up there in Oxford called Blind Gems. You might remember Blind Gems. And they literally, they just found me. They tracked me down. And originally, I was a little nervous about doing it. And I wanted my friend Amos Harvey to help me with it because he's a real guru way over me. But he ended up not being able to do it. But it was an amazing experience. There were mistakes that I made of doing something like that. I thought it was going to be my big break, which looking back on it, it wasn't. But I did get hired from her later on, 2 years later. You know, there were times when I, you know, with the way she was working, she had these connections through me. And when something went kind of wrong, these guys like T-Model Ford and guys from down there in Greenville and R.L. Burnside and any of those guys, you know, it's that, you know, I'm doing something wrong, not her. And you know, she didn't understand that these guys didn't know who she was and they didn't care. So, you know, that was a little bit hard without going into too deep about it. But that was something she had to get over real quick. Because you think R.L. Burnside cares who she is? She ain't selling any of his albums. That was a little tough for Annie. At the end of the trip, she gave me I had been speaking to her about it. That was back when the good old days when we were all shooting film, which I wish we still were. But she gave me Mamiya 7.2 camera that shot medium format. And I got it back, and I was so excited about it. It was a rangefinder system that you had to line up the two things. You're supposed to be able to shoot real low-light situations, which was good for me. And I went and got my eyes checked about 4 times. I thought I was going blind or something. And then finally took it back to the camera store and found out that she had given it to me because she had gotten mad at a shoot before and thrown it across the room and smashed up against the wall. Still, though, I was like, wow, it's a camera from Annie Leibovitz. But all in all, I mean, it was an incredible experience to work with her. And you know, it always is just to work with somebody from that stature. I just wish, and I don't see it necessarily, I wish I would get to that point these days. But it's almost since digital has come out, I feel like the whole business, to be totally honest, has gotten convoluted. And it is extremely hard. I will get calls all the time of people wanting to know to hire me, and I'll quote them my day price, and they're just like, tough, we'll find somebody else who's more hungry. Oh, but we could publish you in this magazine. And I'm like, dude, I've already been published so many times I can't count them. That doesn't matter to me anymore. I one day want to have a wife and be able to have money to, you know, have kids too.
So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you so much, Adam Smith, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. More can be found out about Adam at adamsmithphotography.com. Thank you to our live audience here at William F. Lehman Public Library in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. Tonight's show is sponsored by the Argenta Arts Foundation. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
About 10 years ago, I went through this phase where I was wanting to write a country song about every holiday. But this song's called This Happy New Year Ain't So Happy At All.
Happy New Year. Pour the punch, raise the glass. Happy New Year. Another year will hit. These feelings pass. A couple hugs. Confetti flies, I drop my head and start to cry. This happy new year ain't so happy. piano. New Year's resolutions, now friend, I have a few. Shake these smokes and lose some pounds and read the Bible through. Baby, there's one thing that I can't do. These feelings for you, I can't believe we're through.
Writer accommodations provided by the Baker House Bed and Breakfast. More at BakerHouseNLR.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.